on 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty. Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for keeping us entertained this afternoon. It's Thursday the 24th of March and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Paul Corrie is live in studio as a busy few days of International Association football kick off. In rugby, we'll hear from the Irish camp and preview the Women's Six Nations with Alison Donnelly. Plus, in the men's game, we've Ronan O'Gara on Irish progress this year.
For me, that's smart play by Ireland, and the fact that they stayed under the radar and England cracked first mentally and only took them 90 seconds to crack. That's what happens in top-level sport.
We'll have Jeff Shepherd on the un-retirement of Tom Brady, and in Gaelic Games, Oisín McConville on the new breed of Gaelic footballer.
You don't went a while anymore and come back and try and recover from the excesses of Christmas or summer months or whatever time of year it happens to be. These guys come in and hit the ground running.
As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company on this Thursday evening, this sunny Thursday evening in South Dublin, and hopefully it's sunny wherever you are tuning in from. It is great to have your company, and it's great to be in the company of Paul Corrie, who I'm sure was out enjoying the sunshine before we dragged him into studio. Paul, before we get into our football chat, a couple of news headlines, and to be honest, they all surround football as well. So bad news for England, Northern Ireland and Austria at this year's Women's Euros, who are all in the same group as Norway, and that's because former Ballon d'Or winner Ada Hegerberg has ended her five-year exile from the Norway team. The 26-year-old Leon Ford stopped playing for her national side because of a perceived lack of respect for female players in Norway, but she has been included in the squad for the World Cup qualifiers against Kosovo and Poland in April. Your beloved Chelsea FC, Paul, will be allowed to sell tickets to away games, cup matches and fixtures involving the women's team after the UK government made alterations to the club's special license. The club had been unable to sell tickets since owner Roman Abramovich was sanctioned by the government as part of its response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Under the changed license, proceeds from ticket sales will go directly to the Premier League and then be distributed to the relevant party. This move means Chelsea will be able to sell tickets for their home Champions League quarter-final against Real Madrid on April 6th and the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley Stadium on the weekend of the 16th of April, and that is of course against Crystal Palace. My final bit of football news is that former Ireland defender Alan Mabry has been appointed manager of Edinburgh City in the Scottish League 2. So I think that rounds up everything. Paul, will you be heading over to any Chelsea matches now that the tickets are available?
I'm not too sure. There was a few murmurs around the house about going over to the FA Cup semi-final against Crystal Palace, so I have to wait and see how easy or uneasy it is to get your hands on tickets and flights and whatnot. So listen, positive news as a Chelsea fan. It's nice that fans at least be able to get in and see their team. Might see how the days and weeks come, Shane.
Possibly so. One other bit of news, just stepping away from football, is that the match play tournament in golf is currently going on, and unfortunately Ireland's Seamus Power is currently trailing Patrick Cantlay of the United States. Cantlay is 2 up through 5, and Shane Lowry is due out in about 5 minutes time, so we'll be keeping you up to date on the golf as that one develops. But turning back to football, Paul, lots to get through. And I suppose it's all Irish national teams, but it's across the age grades. So I suppose let's start from the ground up. Let's start from grassroots before we get on to the men's senior team. Just very briefly, some good wins during the week. If we start with the women's under-17s, this was their first of 3 UEFA Women's Under-17 European Championship round 2 games for that side. And they fought back to draw 1-1 with Slovakia in Tallaght Stadium during the week. Slovakia were awarded a penalty in the 70th minute to make it 1-0. It was disappointing for Ireland after controlling the game for so long, but they came back in front of 1,153 spectators, so it's nice to see crowds in four figures there. And they didn't give up. Finally, in the 88th minute, after another fantastic free kick into the box by O'Mahony, the ball was deflected out and Lawrence hit it home for the equaliser. What stood out there, Piemont defender Tara O'Hanlon was player of the match, and Shell's Abby Larkin, really, really bright future ahead of her. So we've talked previously, Paul, about young players making the breakthrough into the senior team. Abby Larkin has been playing senior football already. She's doing really well for Shell. She won a league title last year, and they're performing for the under-17s, and we will get on to the men's and the underage grades there. But it's great to see, from the ground up, the grassroots level of football, both in men's football and in women's football, these stars shining through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what a number of people, Shane, who are involved in the game have cried out for a long period of time now, is whether it's across the women's or whether it's across the men's, is that there's a pathway for these players that, you know, whether it be on an international front or a domestic front, that there's somewhere that they can hone their trade and somewhere where they can progress, you know, progressively through the ranks and work their way up the ladder. So it's great to see that there's, you know, both men and women playing in senior squads and involved in underage internationals. So promising signs. And what you ask for the women's game in particular is that they learn from the mistakes of maybe the more established men's game. There's a bucket load of sponsors wanting to get in behind the women's game. We have to take advantage of it. And when you talk about young promising stars, it's important that they get the correct coaching, the correct infrastructure put around them in order to give them the best opportunity of making a career in the game, to try emulate somewhat of maybe a Katie McCabe.
Absolutely. And speaking of Katie McCabe, actually, her Arsenal side drew 1-1 with Wolfsburg last night. They got an equaliser in the 89th minute, so it's 1-1 with that tie heading into the second leg back in Germany. Katie McCabe started, she played 76 minutes, so it's great to see Katie. And Arsenal going for a treble as well, so hopefully it goes well for Arsenal and Katie. We talked about the women's under-17s briefly, and the men's under-17s. They unfortunately were beaten 4-1 away to Portugal. However, good performances by Marco Mahoney, who got the goal. That's 9 goals in 9 international games. He recently signed a professional deal at Cork City down there. Kevin Zeffie was, now admittedly I only saw the highlights of the game, I didn't see it in full, but a lot of the highlights centred around Kevin Zeffie. He got the assist for the goal, and Cathal Heffernan, who has been spoken about so much as well, was playing in defence as well. So again, we're seeing names. Sam Curtis even has been talked in League of Ireland circles as well, about one certainly for the future. So again, similar situation, talent coming through, and we will mention that in the senior side, but it's just so positive.
Yeah, it is. I was involved at this age group. I coached Belvedere when they're in the DDSL. Adam Murphy was playing yesterday in the Irish under-17s. It's a strong age group, Shane, and it's probably one where you could look at progressing a number of those individuals through to the 19s and hopefully onto the 21s and beyond. It was an unfortunate type of game. They went one behind. It was a lovely goal from Velosa from Portugal in the opening 20 minutes, and from there Ireland were sort of chasing the game. They were 2-0 down at half time, but when they kind of got a bit more structure on their play and how they were going about the second half, they really came into the game and they fully deserved their goal in 72 minutes. Like you mentioned, O'Mahony from Cork, who looks a live wire. He's raw, he's strong, he's quick, certainly has a bit to work on his game, but like any 16-year-old you would expect that. Certainly has a knack for goal, and he took his goal well, and you were looking for them to just push on from there because Portugal looked on the racks but never kind of materialised. And the scoreline was 4-1, but Portugal scored 2 both in injury time, so an unfortunate result. But they do have games to come against Bulgaria and Finland, and as far as I know, the top two teams go through into the next round of that qualifying, so there is still hope for that age group. And like I mentioned, a number of players there who you could look at and maybe progress. And Zeffie, for all his tricks and flicks, I thought was a little disappointing. Certainly has a lot to learn in the game, in order how to use other players to bring themselves in the game. A lot of it is direct dribbling without end product all the time, and like I mentioned, these guys are 16, so we can't expect a perfect performance, but certainly a bit to learn. Vata was somebody who I thought looked really good. He played in the 10, receiving the ball in the half turn, got at the back four, and O'Mahony in particular from Cork stood out. So it's a good age group. You mentioned Sam Curtis, Heffernan, a number of players who we've heard of before. So the games against Bulgaria and Finland are probably a bit more of a benchmark to measure them on, and hopefully they can pick up enough points to get through to the next round.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, the match against Portugal was in Portugal as well, so Portugal obviously had home advantage. You mentioned the next fixture, so they play Finland on Saturday and Bulgaria on Tuesday next, and as I say, they will be in Portugal as well. Moving up the grades to the Ireland under-19s, Kearney Chukwuemeka's brace was the deciding factor in the Republic of Ireland men's under-19s defeat to England last night, as Tom Mohan's side fell to a 3-1 loss at the Bank Stadium in Walsall. Dane Scarlett gave England the lead early on, and despite James a Banquo's equaliser for Ireland. It was Chukwuemeka's brace that secured the victory. Ireland did have a good few chances. Johnny Kenny hit the post, England cleared the ball at the second attempt of the resulting scramble, despite having to make two early substitutions. So a bit of bad news in the first half. Sinclair Armstrong went off and Johnny Kenny went off as well. Ireland did manage to draw level. Given I always plug the goalkeepers, it has to be mentioned, Dan Rose made a fantastic save after Aaron Ramsey put him to the test late on. So again, similar to the 17s, obviously it's a defeat, it's a 3-1 defeat, but progress is being made. Tom Mohan's an excellent operator over that side. And again, there's names there, James Banquo. We've talked obviously about his move over to Italy, Garcia McNulty. There's been a lot kind of said about him. And Sir Johnny Kenny and Sinclair Armstrong, we've spoken about them at length, particularly with their League of Ireland stuff as well. Unfortunately, they did go off. But again, a few players that we hopefully will be keeping an eye on in the coming years.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, it goes back to it. They've come through the system and you would imagine they're a product of the system and parts of that are working. And it's nice to see James Banquo, somebody who's involved heavily in the League of Ireland today, get on the score sheet. But you know, when you look at it, I'm not sure how you pronounce that young kid's name from Aston Villa. Go on, Shane.
Kearney Chukwuemeka.
He's playing for the Aston Villa first team,
yeah,
in the Premier League. Like, we don't have players of that standard, and it's very hard to compete with the likes of an England or Portugal or an Italy or Spain. Mm. He's a standout performer. He's not looked out of place when he's played under Gerrard in that team. He's often come on in games. I think against Manchester United, he was particularly impressive. And it's no surprise to see him popping up with two goals. For Tom Mohan and 19s, it's just a bit unfortunate they've drawn Portugal and England in that group, which makes it a very difficult one to get out of. But like you mentioned, the likes of Kenny, the likes of Armstrong, the likes of Banquo, these guys have all come through the League of Ireland structure. So we are certainly getting some bits and pieces of that right, and long may that continue.
Yeah, and you mentioned Chukwuemeka there as well, but also Vale, who's been in a couple of Chelsea first teams, and Liam Delap as well. Unfortunately, Roy Delap's playing a son.
And he played for Man City first team, yeah, last year against, yeah, Leicester. I remember he came on up front, and young Vale for Chelsea came on the weekend in the FA Cup. So it's very hard. Like, these kids are just almost nurtured into prime athletes from the age of 10, 11, 12, and we unfortunately don't have those structures in place. But there's a lot to learn from a fixture like that and from going up against a team like England.
And these young English players being managed by League of Ireland legend, which I was shocked at. Ian Foster, former Galway United and Dundalk manager, going well. Fans of Galway will obviously remember him from 2009, I think, kept Galway up.
Yeah, and then he was at Dundalk. Yeah, yeah. I would have played against the sides. Between Ian Foster and Lee Carsley, we're certainly missing out on our staff. We're certainly losing some of our better ones to England. So interesting one when you saw it there. He's obviously a coach. He's that's highly regarded. I'd say very hands on. He was number two. I can't think to who it was now at Galway.
Jeff Kenna went off the Pats. So he was number two in 08. They kept Galway up, and then when Jeff went to Pats in 09, Ian Foster got the main gig there then.
Yeah, and that's what you'd expect of probably those underage managers, that they're hands-on on the coaching and kind of putting their fingerprints on the style of play. And he's obviously somebody who's grown into that role, but that's a serious job for Ian Foster to have.
Absolutely. And Ian Foster, you'd like to think that his stint with Galway and guiding Dundalk to the Europa League is what got him the gig, but he also done the pro licence with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Gianfranco Zola. So however, I am going to have to apologise for giving the wrong score in the golf. I'm going to blame the PGA Tour website, and hopefully they don't I don't get any backlash on that. But Seamus Power is actually one up through six now. It's not Patrick Cantlay leading, so it's great news that Seamus Power is leading. And over on the LPGA Tour, Leona Maguire is tied sixth on 3 under through 11. She is currently 2 strokes off the lead in the JTBC Classic. So apologies for the wrong information given out there. But back to association football, and we're going up the rank. Just briefly on the under-21s, Republic of Ireland under-21s manager Jim Crawford has called up St Patrick's Athletic Dara Burns, Crystal Palace Killian Phillips and Greenock Morton's Oisin McEntee to the under-21 squad ahead of next week's qualifier with Sweden, a game you can see live on RT television with a 5 p.m. kickoff. The trio are called up from the under-20s group that had been in a 3-day training camp earlier this week. I think they lost a game to the Ireland amateur side 1-0 up in Home Farm, but again, a good few players kind of well, hopefully again, it's the same narrative. The likes of Dawson Devoy, we've talked about him at length. Darragh Burns has gone so well for Pats as well, and Fetsi Abasele on Derby as well, due move over to Italy. So again, players for the future. But the players at the moment that we are talking about that will be going into games against Belgium and Lithuania, a bit of squad news is that Gavin Bisounou unfortunately has left the squad with illness. Max O'Leary gets the call up. Paul, we spoke yesterday. I'm not sure if you saw Darren Randolph's Instagram, but I'm still not retired. I think Max O'Leary now will be added to the list of players that won't be on Darren Randolph's Christmas card list anyway. Listen, starting at the goalkeepers, obviously it's a great chance for Caoimhín Kelleher, and it would be great to see him now play another game for Ireland, given what he's done for Liverpool. But also, on a very small side note, if anything happens to Caoimhín Kelleher, it's a squeaky bum time playing against Belgium, world's number one team. Well, granted, we're missing a few players, but still.
I don't really get it. I really don't get it. You know, if you had a competitive game in the morning, you were wanting to get 3 points, there's no way you'd play Max O'Leary or James Talbot against the Belgians. Surely you call up Darren Randolph. I actually think it's quite disrespectful that he hasn't been called up, given the service he's given to Ireland. I know he's not playing. He's hardly played any games for West Ham over the last 2 years. But
that experience, though.
Yeah, he is that experience. And I can't really get my head around it. Maybe Kenny's looking at it and saying, you know, he's pushed on in his career and maybe he's not going to be involved in campaigns going forward. But I think you do need to keep players like that close to the camp, at least that show them the respect of calling them up when we are a bit depleted. We are lucky that we have Kelleher, we've Bisounou, and we've Mark Travers coming through. We've an array of resources there that we're blessed with. But when I saw James Talbot getting called up and Darren Randolph being left in the sidelines, I must admit I was a bit perplexed.
No, it will be interesting to see. And even, I mean, I think I have to give credit, this isn't my point, Dodge on Twitter, a staunch League of Ireland man, was even saying that Ed McGuinty might be the best goalkeeper in the league as well. So it is an interesting debate for sure. But Shane Duffy has given his opinion on Caoimhín Kelleher's chance now for Ireland.
Oh, we've got two lads come in now, they've got a chance and everyone needs a bit of luck, and that's what they've got. So they're in the squad and we trust them as well. But I said Cueve's in a good position now where he needed a bit of luck. Gavin's performed unbelievable for us and he's going to be a miss. But as I said, the football, it's about taking the chances now, and Cueve will come in and hopefully and does what he does for Liverpool, really. So as I said, we're a bit lucky in that position.
So it will be interesting to see. There are the thoughts of Shane Duffy just on Caoimhín Kelleher playing in goal. But overall, Paul, I mean, yes, we're playing Belgium. It's going to be a tough challenge. And I know Belgium don't have all of their stars there, but they're still the number one ranked team for a reason. And then the challenge of Lithuania on Tuesday. But is this a time when results really start to matter now? Because we're a bit past the transition period of Stephen Kenny in Ireland and getting his methods across and what he wants to bring to the team. So with that comes a bit of extra pressure, is it fair to say?
Yeah, maybe not against Belgium, and I don't think competitive games or friendly games against Belgium will always be the benchmark given how strong they are in world football at this moment. But you certainly do want to see progress in the performance. You want to see it, you know, in the individual performances, but also working within the shape that Kenny has taken up. I think it was after the England game we went to a five at the back. We've looked far more solid in that system. We've looked far more progressive in it. And what you just want to see is a bit of momentum gathering behind that, because we've had good results. We've kept clean sheets. Performances, I think, are vitally important. If we have enough good performances, we'll win the games that people expect us to win. Yes, I think the spotlight will come on Stephen Kenny. I really do think it will when we start heading in towards those Nations League games. I think that's where people will expect us to be competitive. Scotland, Ukraine and Armenia, I think, is the other one. So they are certainly games that we will be expected, and people expect that we're competitive and that we can win more games than we have done previously against teams of our own ranking. So, yeah, listen, I don't think the weekend will be the benchmark. I think Belgium could be a tricky fixture. I think leaving the big guns at home puts a bit more pressure on us. One, people will be saying it's a second string Belgium side, but anybody who does play for Belgium is vying for a spot in the World Cup squad come Qatar. And these are people, you know, if you put in your Hazards and your De Bruynes, they might go through the motions. These fellas are going to be right at it, and they have major strength and depth. You know, Yuri Tielemans, I think, will skip it aside. That will tell you all you need to know. But I don't think the pressure will come on even if we got beaten this weekend, but I think in the coming weeks and months there will be an expectancy that will win some of these games.
Yeah, I'm not expecting Ireland to go and tonk Belgium now by a couple of goals, but it is more of a case of just there has to be a cut-off point, I think. Anyway, one man in the Ireland squad who'll be very familiar with Belgium is Josh Cullen, and earlier today he was chatting to our own Tony O'Donoghue.
I know a lot of work over there has gone into the grassroots side of things over, I suppose, a long period of time now. And obviously they've developed some really good players who have gone on to play for the top clubs around the world and obviously make their national team a very strong side. So yeah, I think it's obviously like anything, it takes time, and they've obviously worked on it over a long period of time.
Is there a particular style of football that they encourage, do you think?
And they like to be possession based. Obviously we've analysed them as a team, we know they're a possession based side who likes to dominate the ball. And they also have good athletes as well, so I suppose they're an all-round strong side, and it'll be a good test for us. But I'm confident, and hopefully we can put a good performance in and get a good result against a top team.
There's the thoughts of Josh Cullen. So big match against Belgium. We'll be previewing it again tomorrow with Alan Cawley in a bit more detail. Paul, you're going to stick around because there are a couple of World Cup qualifiers on this evening that we'll be chatting about in due course. Japan and Saudi Arabia booked their places in the World Cup, but there are a couple of European qualifications, Wales, Austria, Italy, Macedonia, to name but a few. So you'll be sticking around, but in a couple of minutes' time, we'll be turning our attention to rugby football and the TikTok Women's Six Nations in the company of Alison Donnelly. So do stay with us.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
Rugby.
Yes, you're very welcome back to Game On this Thursday evening. I'm Shane Dawson as we turn our attention to rugby and the Women's Six Nations in the company of Alison Donnelly, the editor of the women's rugby site scrumqueens.com. Alison, pleasure as always to chat, and I suppose it's right time now to start getting a bit giddy, get a bit excited. We're a couple of days out from the kickoff of the tournament. It all begins with Scotland England at 12 p.m. on Saturday, then our own Ireland will face Wales at 4:45, and then on Sunday at 3 p.m. it is France against Italy. Let us start a conversation, Ali, with Ireland. It is a new dawn, a new era for Irish women's rugby, I suppose it's fair to say.
Yeah, I think in more ways than one. You know, there's a very new look team there that he's picked for the weekend. New captain, new coaches, new team manager, you know, new kind of announcements around the team in the last few weeks. So yeah, it's going to be quite exciting to watch Ireland this year, because in so many ways the pressure's off them. You know, they're not at the World Cup. Yes, that's really disappointing, but they can afford. I mean, this is a really good opportunity for Greg McWilliams. He'll probably never have this again, you know, in the rest of his coaching career with Ireland, that kind of, you know, pressure lifted off him to try new things. You know, the expectation that they'll be, you know, taking time to work new combinations with new players coming in. So I think it will be an exciting matchup, and there's two very different teams, you know, to play each other this weekend. So it's going to be quite difficult to call, actually, but I think it'll be a good game.
You mentioned the new experience and that Greg McWilliams is bringing players in, and he was doing a bit of media today, and I actually spoke about that. He spoke about the morale of this new look team.
I mean, it's been fantastic. Honestly, I mean, it's so easy for any head coach to stand up here and say it's fantastic, because everyone would say that. But I've been blown away by their energy as a group. I think if you want to be a real family, you need to go through really tough times, and they have gone through tough times, and that's good. That makes you stronger if you can reflect and process it. I think it's maybe a chip on the shoulder that you want as a group. You've got to be able to prove people wrong in anything you do. That provides like our reason, our DNA. So I think it's been a good thing. And I think the fact is now that we've got girls out there that have experienced tough times, which makes them stronger and able to cope more under pressure.
Listen, Ali, it's obviously been well documented, the issues that has besieged women's rugby, I suppose, in recent times. But now we have new resources, we've investment in the game, and proper investment, proper respect, and indeed the new head coach that we've heard from there, Greg McWilliams. So Ireland will have the opportunity, you mentioned, without the focus of the World Cup, to try and bring these players through. But it's a free shot for Greg McWilliams, and it is a shot then for this team to really prove themselves. And looking at the starting 15 that he's named, I mean, what do you make of it? Because I suppose what stands out to me, I suppose, as a casual viewer, is Stacey Flood moved to inside centre. We've had about a dozen out halves since Niamh Briggs, and we're trying to fill that hole. We thought it might be Stacey Flood. So Nicole Cronin then, who's usually a nine, plays out half with Evian Riley coming in at scrum half as well. So he's already kind of making a few big calls.
Yeah, because I guess he wants to see what his squad can do, and he wants to see who can play where, and that key position of 10. I mean, it's amazing how many women's nations have really struggled to, you know, the same is true in England, where Casey Jane McLean is retired, and England have really struggled to find a number one to replace her. It's a tough, tough spot in the women's game. I mean, I think this is a great time for Greg because, as you said, it is a free shot and he can have a go and he can bring people in. I wouldn't underestimate as well just how keen the players will be just to get back out and play. You know, it's been a really rough 5-6 months for them. You know, the failure to qualify, a pretty average autumn. I know they won their games, but they didn't play brilliantly. It was clear that something wasn't right around the squad. And then we had the letter and all the media coverage and all the negotiations and all the rest of it. I think the girls would just want to put that behind them and just play rugby. And so, you know, for them, it's just like, right, let's park all of that in the past. That's last year. Here's an opportunity for us to kind of say what we're about. And like, you know, I think we can rightly expect that not to be perfect. One other thing I'd say that is really in Ireland's favour, though, is, you know, this is an interesting team. It's a young team. It's very inexperienced. The player with the most caps only has 23, which really isn't very much in the international game. There's only 3 years to the next World Cup. We've got a shortened window because of the delay. They get an extra year. You know, a lot of the other teams are going to be going through transition next year, and Ireland will have had that little base to go. So, you know, you can be really disappointed about this not being a World Cup build-up Six Nations, but you can also say, what an opportunity for these young players to be a really strong, experienced team in 3 years' time.
I do want to talk about the challenge of Wales specifically, but you mentioned that it is a new team and how inexperienced some of the players are. I mean, there's 9 uncapped players in the wider squad and a new captain now in Nicola Friday following the retirement of Ciara Griffin. And they do have, I suppose, on paper, their two toughest games away from home. Well, listen, on paper and realistically as well. So what would a realistic target be for Ireland coming out of this Six Nations?
Yeah, I mean, all 3 home games can be won. I mean, that's definite. You know, Ireland, even with a new-look squad, home advantage does matter in the Six Nations, especially with the games bumping up against each other so quickly. But I think 3 wins would be excellent for Ireland. Whether they can pull that off, I don't know, but at least 2. You know, remember the last round against Scotland, there's a 7s World Series round as well, so quite likely some of the players who are playing this weekend will be gone and be in Langford with the 7 squad. So that's the Scotland game. You know, that'll be a tough match. Sure, Ireland at the back of their minds will have a little bit of revenge or point to prove against Scotland, who obviously got that last slot at the World Cup. But 3 home wins, definitely achievable, and maybe 2 is okay, I think, at this stage.
And you mentioned, I suppose, the emphasis on, and there's a lot of players, even in Greg McWilliams starting 15 there in the backs, that come from the 7s background as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out. But just on the challenge of Wales, Greg McWilliams, as I say, was doing a bit of media, and here's his thoughts on what to expect this weekend.
Wales are well coached. Ian Cunningham's a smart coach. I think Nigel Walker, who's the man behind, has put together a really good coaching group. And I think the players are fantastic. I mean, 7 or 8 of them are playing for the Bristol Bears that are currently second in the Allianz Premiership. You know, I look at people like Jazz Joyce, who's like a phenomenal player, very fast. She's been in and out of the 7s as well. And you look at somebody then like Lily Crapp, who's in the back row, who's a phenomenal ball carrier. You look at Jones, you look at Hale in the front row. I mean, we're giving away maybe 60 kgs in the front row alone. They're big people and they're powerful. So it's our job to make sure that we're able to cope with that corridor power. And that's going to be one of the main things we have to get right, is facing that power.
And I suppose, Ali, we talk about what they will bring on the pitch as well, but Wales as a whole will be buoyed, and they will get a proper boost from the off-field progression as well that's been made in women's rugby in Wales with the introduction of contracts and so on. So they're going to be a serious challenge, and it's positive for the game in Wales as well.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of unknowns about this Welsh squad. The squad is experienced, so we know the players and we know what they can bring. And I think Greg's assessment of them is spot on. Big pack, players know each other very well, particularly the seven players who are at Bristol. But they've never quite, you know, the last few years, they haven't really put that together in any great shape or form. And Ireland absolutely hammered them last year. They lost a kind of friendly game last week to a US kind of English-based team. And what we don't know, I think, is the killer question is, how has that, you know, first few months of professionalism gone? So there's 10 players in this team at the weekend who are now full-time training. That's only been underway for, you know, a matter of weeks. So Is it too soon for that to have taken effect? You know, that idea that they get to train together, get to recover in a way that Ireland don't. I suspect it is a bit too soon, and we might not see that really come to the fore till even next year. When England, you know, turned pro in 2019, it took them a while to become the kind of ruthless machine that they are now. So, you know, that there's a great unknown about Wales. But in fact, there's similarities between Ireland and Wales. There's momentum and feel good around both of those squads at the moment, and both of them are in this kind of new era transition. So that's why I think this is probably the pick of the weekend's games.
Okay, well, certainly should be interesting in that regard. Alison, you yourself mentioned on Twitter a little bit earlier on today, and you said, I think France will win the title this year for reasons that go beyond Twitter's character limit. So, Alison Donnelly, the floor is yours.
Well, I wasn't expecting to answer that, and I wasn't expecting to have to answer it, because I tried to put an end to it with that tweet. But no, I think England, you know, England are an outstanding team, and they are, I feel, even if they don't win the Six Nations, they are probably the World Cup favourites. The reason I tip France is, one, because the last game is in France, in Bayonne. They'll have a massive crowd. They will probably sell out. They will emotionally get up for that game. They haven't beaten England in, you know, the last 9-10 matches, right? So there's a great opportunity there to do that. Second, England have already talked about using their squad on a rotation basis in the Six Nations, so having a go at trying different combinations. Now, you know, their first and their second team can probably beat most teams, but I do think, you know, that means they'll probably arrive in France not, you know, that team that their starting lineup won't have played together in every single game as the other teams are going to and they're looking kind of long term, right? They've got games to come between now and the World Cup. It's about fine tuning for them. So I'm going with France on a sort of a gut that they will emotionally get themselves up for that last game in front of a massive crowd, coming off the back of all those great wins against New Zealand in the autumn. But I don't think that many people agree with me. I think most people who are involved in the women's game can't see anyone beating England, but there we go. I'm putting myself out there. Well, you can come back to me afterwards and see how we go.
Well, that's what Twitter's for, isn't it? For friendly debate. But just on England, obviously you're based over there yourself. What's the feeling around there? I mean, headline team news, I suppose, centre Emily Scarrett will make her first England appearance in 11 months when the side begin their Six Nations title defence in Scotland. As I mentioned, that's a 12 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. So it's great, I suppose, it's nearly amazing to see Scarrett come back in such a short period of time. Rosie Gallagher is at lock on Saturday, earning her second England cap more than 3 years after her first as well. And Maud Murr starts at loosehead prop for the first time, having played tight head on her previous four appearances. So I suppose, what's the mood in England?
Yeah, look, they're just a sensational kind of all-round squad in terms of the depth that they have and the quality that they have. And I think what's really, two things have really benefited them the last few years. One is professionalism. You know, they're the world's first, and not only anymore, New Zealand have also turned pro in the last year, but England have been doing it now for 2 or 3 years. And the second thing is the quality of the league that all the girls are playing in. So Premier 15s over here, really going from strength to strength, particularly the top 4 or 5 teams. And that's why, of course, there are Irish players playing here too. So, you know, it's very hard to beat them, you know, no matter what combination they put out there. They're phenomenally fit, well-conditioned players who are technically strong. So, look, they expect to win it, right? That's the investment that they've put into the game, is that that's the expectation on them, is always to win every game. But if you look at the results they've had against France, the last 7-8 games, it's really, bar one or two matches, not been very much in it at all. You know, last year was 3-4 points. So even though they are outstanding, they're ruthless, all the rest of it, you know, when they play France, anything can happen. So I think that'll be a great, great game to end the year on, in the Six Nations on.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see how it goes. As we mentioned there, it is kind of a championship split in two, with France and England battling it out, the two professional teams, and then hopefully Ireland will be third, and then we'll be interesting to see how the rest of the competition goes as well. Just very, very briefly on Italy, Ali, because we're a bit pushed for time. I mean, they do have a couple of world-class players in their ranks, but will it just be a case of, if they get anything against anyone, it will be a massive shock?
No, I think, you know, I think Italy are a pretty good team, and they've got a hard start their way in France, and then they've got to play England. So they've got their two toughest games up first. But no, Italy are one of the most improved teams in Europe. They've got a very settled squad. You know, Beatrice Dragoni, Sarah Barton, and Emmanuel Furlan, those sorts of players know what they're about. So no, I think you know, they'll be pretty confident, particularly at home to Scotland, probably away to Wales. They can nick a few wins, and you know, they're also building towards that World Cup, so in a slightly different headspace to Ireland. But you know, I wouldn't you know, I wouldn't have them bottom if I was doing a prediction table right now, definitely.
Okay, well, very briefly, what is the prediction table?
I think that was inevitably going to be the next question.
No, you're right.
I should follow. I mean, I think I settled in my head earlier on France, England, Ireland, Italy, Scotland, Wales is where I ended up.
Okay, well,
but it's very difficult. Can I just will say, I've been involved in women's rugby for a long time. I've been watching the Six Nations for too long to even mention because I sound tragic and old. But this is the first year, I think, where that third to sixth round, that those places are really difficult to call. Really, really difficult. Usually you have a good sense from the home or away fixtures, but there really isn't very much at the moment between Italy, Scotland, Wales and Ireland. So that's my six, but, you know, that could be totally wrong. And there we go.
Absolutely. Well, it should be interesting to see how it goes. And indeed, not to do Italy a disservice, you mentioned Sarah Barrington, the only Italian women's player to have won over 100 caps. So it would be great to see her in the mix in the final game in Bayonne. She'll be a fitting climax to the Women's Championship that will have more eyes on it than ever before, which is great to see. Alison Donnelly of scrumqueens.com, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll be chatting plenty over the next coming weeks as the Six Nations kicks off. But from women's rugby to men's rugby, a little bit earlier on, I caught up with Ronan O'Gara, who was launching the Aviva Mini Rugby Festivals in the Aviva Stadium. I began by asking him how the Grand Slam success was being received in France.
Game on.
Rugby.
You know, prior to the competition, there was pressure on this team because it was 2010 since they had won a Grand Slam. That's a long time in French rugby. They had beaten the All Blacks convincingly in November. So on their way, I suppose, to, in their eyes, making a big claim for Rugby World Cup. They needed to get a Grand Slam, and to be fair to them, 5 out of 5, not in emphatic style, but in probably third or fourth gear, speaks volumes for, I suppose, the strength and depth of what the current squad is doing.
From an Irish perspective, a 12th triple crown ending the tournament with a 4th bonus point win to finish 6 points better off than in any other campaign since the system was introduced in 2017. That is, of course, excluding the 2018 Grand Slam. So on paper, it seems like a fairly decent start to 2022 for Andy Farrell's side. How do you feel Ireland performed overall and the takeaway from this tournament?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly positive. You know, I think obviously, yeah, there's reason to be disappointed that, you know, you didn't win a Grand Slam, but a Grand Slam is really, really difficult and it's an exceptional thing to do. But that shouldn't take away, I suppose, from what this Irish team has done. I think in the 4 other games to win their games with a bonus point for the amount of tries they're scoring, 24 tries in a campaign, only 4 conceded, going to Twickenham, yeah, they got a red card, but England did that themselves. You know what I mean? That's what happens when you have a team under pressure. You come up with a few crazy decisions from the pressure you're probably put under emotionally and mentally during the week, that he comes up with, you know what I mean, a high shot that becomes dangerous, becomes a red card that feeds into exactly what the opposition wants. So for me, that's smart play by Ireland, and the fact that they stayed under the radar and England cracked first mentally, and it only took them 90 seconds to crack. But that's what happens in top-level sport.
Are they on the right trajectory now for the next World Cup in terms of unearthing a few new faces, adopting a game plan that becomes second nature with winning momentum? Or do you feel there are still a few concerning areas of tweaking that need to be explored?
For me, the World Cup is too far away to be thinking about. I think in top-level sport, you have to have a general plan about how the World Cup will take place. But I think when you're 3 months out from that, then you're looking at where your team is with momentum. 18 months out, it's not possible, I think, to continue that, because it'll be different momentum in 12 months' time. You'll have played a summer tour, a November series, and another Six Nations. So then we'll be a lot more wiser. Where we are in, I suppose, the medium-term plan is that we need to know who our second-out half is, who our third-out half is. We need to understand if Ty Farling gets sick the morning of a game, who comes in for him, who comes on the bench for the player who's pushed into the starting slot. A lot of competition at hooker. Second row seems very healthy. The back row is always the most competitive. There's probably 9 or 10 players that can play in 3 positions. You're going to need that because there's huge attritional rate in the back row. Conor Murray responded well, I think, to probably his demotion. Came back probably strong in the last 2 games as an impact off the bench. The centres, obviously 3 probably centres ahead of the likes of Hume and McCluskey and Farrell. The back 3 is very competitive with a lot of options. So, yes, there's strength and depth, but I think what you need with strength and depth is players in form and competition for places and players playing up to their level when it's required, because the player pool in Ireland, yeah, it's good, but it doesn't go 8 deep.
Game on. Rugby.
Okay, well, from rugby football to Gaelic football, Oisín McConville is up next, so do stay tuned.
RTE
2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Hey, you're very welcome back to Game On this Thursday evening. I'm Shane Dawson and it is great to have your company wherever you're tuning in from. There is Irish action in the World Match Play Golf Tournament at the moment over in Austin. Seamus Power is currently 1-8 and Shane Lowry and Eric Von Ruyen are tied through 3 holes on that one there just as he approaches the fourth. So that is your golf update. Now time to turn our attention to Gaelic games, because Armagh under 20 manager Oisín McConville was on hand this week to launch the Air Grade GA Football under 20 All-Ireland Championship. I caught up with Oisín a little bit earlier on and I began by asking him how he feels Armagh football is faring overall in recent times.
I think when you look at what Armagh seniors are doing and how that we seem to be back in the shop window, I think it's with great enthusiasm that we get back into this, that we get into this job. I think the fact that, as I say, Armagh in general seem to be going a lot better. It seems to be more of a focus on what's happening at underage. So there's a bit of sustainability about what we're doing, you know, in Division One. It's good times as far as Armagh are concerned, and I suppose we spend a bit of time plundering in Division 3 and Division 2, but to be back up there and look as if this is a sustained challenge, and the fact that, you know, we look as if, you know, we are a match for anybody at the minute is definitely something to be buoyed by, definitely.
You mentioned the entertainment and the challenges that we've seen at the top level in the league and that we hope to see in the championship. What do you put that down to? Is it just a simple case of just a higher skill set and improved skill set this year and players are just developing?
Definitely. I think coaches are finding a more of an opportunity, I think, to work with lads. They're not spending the first 2 months of training on the field, trying to get lads fit. The majority of them are coming in good condition. That's not saying that there isn't fitness work going on. Of course there is. But a lot of that is being done in their own time or an extra night or 2 nights or whatever it is. And the actual coaching is being done on the pitch. So I think, yeah, there's a renewed focus on skills. I also think there's a renewed focus from players because there's not as many distractions. So, like, even the fact that we're calling it the split season feels as if there's time set aside for inter-county players to be inter-county players and be club players later on in the year. So I think that has alleviated a lot of the hassles and stresses that would have been there before on inter-county players. And I think they have taken that and run with it and responded to it and put a major focus on getting that club feel within a county setup. And I think if you ask any manager what he wants, that's what he wants. He wants a club feel within a county setup. And I think there's a culmination of reasons there why it has improved dramatically this year as far as the actual ability and some of the players we've seen this year at the highest level. Some of the things they're doing is just a joy to watch, and it's a pleasure to watch them. You know, it's not, you don't went a while anymore and come back and you know, try and recover from the excesses of Christmas or summer months or whatever time of year it happens to be. These guys come in and hit the ground running, and that's testimony to themselves and the conditioning that they have themselves in. And I know people I like to give out about the gym culture and stuff, but young lads are they're in phenomenal shape nowadays, and the way they condition themselves. So it allows the opportunity for a coach to just say, listen, a lot of our work is done. You know, let's spend a lot more time on the ball.
Listen, Oisín, in the news recently as well, Richie Power spoke very candidly and honest, and he mentioned yourself, he name-checked you in terms of helping him. And I suppose given the current GPA, GA standoff at the moment, there's a lot of negative press at the moment. So I just wonder, Is there a lot of positive work that perhaps goes unnoticed or unreported in terms of player support, not only surrounding obviously the gambling side of things that, that Richie has spoken about, but other issues as well that helps the player then to be able to control the outside factors?
I think 100%, Shane, there's a huge network of people there willing to willing to help gays who find themselves in crisis or find themselves needing a little bit of a dig out or a bit of help. I think that's been phenomenal what the GPA have done in that regard, and I've been critical of the GPA in the past, but not in that regard. As far as the way they have structured that and the way they have helped people, and the general public will never know to the extent that young lads are struggling. And I'm not just talking about the elite players; I'm talking about in general. And I think the GPA have put something in place there that is really, really working. And that is absolutely essential for these lads. And you consider that, you know, the pressures and the strains and the commitment and all of those sort of things that these guys are under. I think that we could even do another little bit as far as education is concerned. I'm going to talk about education, talking in general around, you know, unhealthy behaviours and different things like that. But I think in general, the work that the GPA have done, the structures they've put in place is second to none.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Yes, always a pleasure to chat to Oisín McConville. Well, from Gaelic football, we'll be turning our attention to American football, and we'll be going full circle and going back to association football with Paul Corrie and Jeff Shepherd in a few minutes' time. So do stay tuned.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Eye on America.
So I hope the sun has brightened up everyone's day today, because Jeff Shepherd is about to brighten up our evening as we turn our attention to everything American sport. And there's only one place to start, Shep. Tom Brady unretires. What's going on there?
Yeah, so he, you know, I think he was upset that, you know, they got knocked out of the playoffs. And so, you know, he was obviously getting older and he, you know, decided he was going to hang it up. Well, it didn't really last. He made it a whole 6 weeks before he decided to unretire. So I don't even know if he actually even filled out the paperwork in the first place. The Bucks left a spot for him basically on the roster, so they must have felt like he was coming back too. So I will say it's not a ringing endorsement, you know, for his wanting to hang out with his kids too much. You know, I mean, he made it 6 whole weeks.
Do you know who I feel most sorry for here? The bloke who remortgaged the house to bid on the football.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard, there was a gentleman who spent $500,000 to purchase what was quote-unquote Tom Brady's last touchdown pass. It was that football. And it wasn't like an NFT. It was the actual football. And then now it's not worth $500,000. I don't believe it was worth $500,000 then when he bought it, but hey, you know what? He had the money. And so, yeah, now who knows what it's worth, but it's not worth that. But you're right. I feel bad for that dude.
Well, listen, it will be interesting to see how Tom Brady gets on. In American football as well, just very briefly, Shep, before we let you go, the Green Bay have traded Devontae Adams to Las Vegas just a few weeks after they tried to re-sign Aaron Rodgers. So it certainly seems like the Packers just can't help themselves.
Yeah, so, you know, we talk about Aaron Rodgers all the time. He stays for another 4 years, and just a couple of days later, boom, Devontae Adams gets traded to Las Vegas. And, you know, he and Rodgers are very close with each other. And look, here's what the Packers get: a first round and a second round pick this year, so they can get some receivers to go with Aaron Rodgers. But the Raiders are in an arms race out in the AFC West with, you know, Russell Wilson goes to Denver. You've got Kansas City and the Los Angeles Chargers. I mean, they've all got great offenses. And now the Raiders have got a great offense, good quarterback, good running back, nice tight end. I mean, they have to stay competitive, so they had to make that move. And then real quick, Shane, the other big, big move that kind of captivated free agency was Deshaun Watson leaving Houston and going to Cleveland, and he gets $230 million on his contract. But the thing is, he got all of it guaranteed. So there was more guaranteed money handed out this year during free agency than I can remember ever. And I'm thinking this might be a trend we see moving forward, that the teams, to get people to come play in your city, they're going to give you as much money as they possibly can up front.
Shep, you're giving me heart palpitations here. 500 million, 230 million. I'm going to let you go on that. No, I need to calm down. Shep, listen, you're a gentleman. Really great to chat, as always, on all things American football. Paul Corrie is still live in studio, as we'll just finish up very briefly on association football. A couple of games for the World Cup qualification this evening. Italy, Macedonia.